Welcome to the Superhero of Love podcast. I am Bridget Fonger. I wrote a book called Superhero of Love, Heal Your Broken Heart and Then Go Save the World. That book is going to be out in January 2019, but I didn't want to wait until that time to start talking to superheroes of love. And guess what? Here's the news. You are a superhero of love. And through talking to other superheroes like yourself, tapping into that little superhero inside of you, I'm hoping that you and I and all of us start feeling more and more like superheroes of love, meaning that we love and are loved more than ever before. So welcome. Let's get this party started. All right. Today we are in my backyard, so you might hear some beautiful chirping with the beautiful Ed Bacon. Ed Bacon is the author of 8 Habits of Love. Open your heart, open your mind. I read this book when it first came out in 2009. It came out in 2009, right?
Yeah.
2012. So sorry. And, it is an extraordinary book. I can't more highly recommend it. Ed Bacon was also the rector at our local All Saints Church, which is a Episcopalian church, which is the largest Episcopalian church in the Western United States. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. So welcome, Ed Bacon, a true superhero of love. Ed and I were just having a really, really cool conversation, and I want to tap into some of what we were just talking about. So I was explaining to Ed that the goal of my book is to have people at the end of the book be able to love and be loved more than ever before so they can step out into the world and make a difference. And Ed Bacon is the king of making a difference out in the world with that and clearing and empowering hearts so that they can go out and make a difference in the world today. And this world is a really scary place. I think that when we first talked about interviewing, there had just been another school shooting. So I want to hear, people want to hear how to take care of their hearts in the midst of this landscape that we're in right now. And I would love for you to help
me. Sure. Well, thanks for having me. It's lovely to be here. I love, love, love your backyard. Glorious. Foundationally, let's speak about the fact that I believe, as one of my passions, and probably, yeah, it's my central passion, that there really are two basic energies in life, love and fear, not love and hate, because what is beneath hate is fear. And so fear and love are two separate directions, and when we find ourselves going in the direction of fear, it's so very important to build that observation deck about ourselves and visit that observation deck regularly, such that in the midst of busyness or when you get up in the morning or in the middle of a fight or whenever, you can have some awareness that you are going in the direction of fear, that you're in the grip of the energy of fear. And understand that with this philosophy of life, that love is the most potent way to get healing for your heart, to get comfort for your heart, to get protection for your heart while you're in the midst of the arena. So it's not a matter of secluding yourself. It's just a matter of regularly having solitude and stillness so that you build this habit of love in which you are consciously saying, I just lost touch with my true self being my love self, and I need to stop or else I'm going to do damage to myself or anybody else who's around me and to history itself. So you and I are having a conversation on the morning that we discover that Anthony Bourdain killed himself. And we're all very, very sad at the reality of depression and how powerful it can be. And what do we do with our hearts in a day like this when we're so saddened by that and such a good, good human being feeling like he can't go forward. And love is the answer. You get into a community of love, either solitude of love where your community is visiting you with its energy of the living and the dead, or getting together like you and I are getting together physically to talk about the power of love. You know, I'll leave you and I'll go to lunch and have a reunion with somebody while I'm in LA. And, you know, it'll be a love fest. And that's what we do. That's the way you live. That's the best way to have a vital, vibrant life.
I have a question about that because, you know, what happens on Facebook and Twitter immediately is the suicide hotline goes up as soon as anyone of note commits suicide. And I just, my heart, I've never been suicidal. I have very few friends who have even had few suicidal thoughts. So this is out of my realm of understanding. But it feels like how do they even pick up the phone? Don't they feel like they can't even reach out? In other words, I love what you just said about the solitude, in the solitude, love. So if somebody right now is listening to this and they're hurting and they can't call the suicide hotline, or somebody knows somebody who can't, what can they say to them?
Yeah, it's really important for us to say that the God of organized religion doesn't exist, and we need to be an atheist about that God. We're talking about so that you can get that crap cleared out of your life and have room to be loved by the real God, which is love. God is love. 1 John 4 for Bible people who are listening. And that is what we say to our friends who right now are struggling and don't have the energy to call a suicide hotline. You are love. You are made from love. You are made by love. Love is in you. You are not separate from, you are not discontinuous from some kind of crazy, toxic notion of God that you have. You have the God in you. You are God. You are divine. And that God is loving you, and all you need to do is give it a chance. Give it a chance. You're tired, you're hungry, you're angry, you're lonely, you're whatever right now. Give yourself a break so that you can hear the stillest small voice inside you, your inner genius, telling you that you're loved and that you have a great future ahead.
This God is love. I'm looking down at the, I know that you know Michael Curry, and I'd love to hear whatever you wish to say about Michael Curry, but I also know that you have a connection with Dr. Martin Luther King, so I'd love to hear about that too. But I just wanted to read this quote from the Royal Wedding Sermon that I think we all loved and adored. He said, the late Dr. Martin Luther King once said, and I quote, "We must discover the power of love, the power, the redemptive power of love. And when we do that, we will make of this whole world a new world. But love is the only way."
Absolutely. So I love Michael Curry. He and our very, very tight friends, text buddies.
Oh, cute.
He recorded the neatest greeting when I'm left All Saints. In any case, he was talking about love as power. And toward the end of his sermon, when he invoked Teilhard de Chardin, he talked about harnessing the power of love. Both of those words are extremely important. With power, it is energy. It is the most powerful energy in the world. It overcomes all other energies. If only we give it a chance, and if we find places to cultivate it, i.e. in community and in stillness and in the other habits of love that I talk about in my book. But also, when we understand that it's energy that we harness, then it is like harnessing horses to your carriage. It will carry you. And you don't have to do the work. And that's the really important thing about love. And fear tells me that I have to do the work. And love says, Mm-mm. All you have to do is get on the sailboat. You know, we will take you where you need to go. We will carry you, and you can trust us. And we're going to be faithful to you. So that's what he was doing there. And he was, to his great credit, not distinguishing the romantic love or the erotic love between those two beautiful people who got married and the love that can transform the world and bring justice and peace to the world. It is all of one energy, and it has all of these different manifestations in terms of intimacy, erotic stuff, and also friendship stuff, and also this kind of self-giving stuff that transforms the world.
So let's go back to the school shootings and the current frustrating political climate. I mean, I personally know people that have still not recovered from Election Day. So those hurting hearts and seeing like what's going on at the border right now. Mm-hmm. What gifts do you have for them?
Well, you're, in my way of thinking, hitting now upon trauma theory. Hmm. And that is, what do I do with the traumatic experiences I've had, which invite me to have and to live in post-traumatic stress syndrome? And soon after the Parkland massacre in Florida, a woman in, when you edit this, you can put in information about her, mm-hmm. was on the PBS NewsHour. She's from Sierra Leone, saw her father be killed, and she was applauding the reality of having a new narrative in the midst of trauma. And trauma theory says that to the degree that you can interrupt the temptation to reenact the trauma and thus re-traumatize yourself, simply because the way trauma works is it wants to become kind of your familiar, you know, neural pathway. If you can live out of a different narrative that acknowledges your traumatic experience and defines you in a way that is greater than that trauma, then you're on your way to wholeness. And she lifted up the Parkland survivors, saying that these kids had already agreed that they were not going to be defined and identified as Parkland survivors, mm-hmm. and victims, but rather they were going to be defined as people who went through that and changed gun laws in America. So that is to activate your activism, and that is what all of us are called to do. We have to acknowledge what went on. We have to grieve. I don't want to be in denial about death. And that's one part. The other part is, how am I going to identify myself? Now, a good friend of mine came back from a continuing education program when I was working here in Pasadena. And she had been led to write brief autobiographies in this continuing education retreat in three ways. One, as a victim.
Hmm.
One as a hero, and one as a learner.
Wow.
And the energy and the story were very different in those three. I'm advocating that all of us acknowledge the fact that, yes, we have horrible things that happen to us, not wanting to be in denial about that. And, yes, that we have really great creative powers and that we can help transform things. But the most life-giving identity to have is as a learner, and to say, what am I learning from this experience, and how do I go forward with it? And I think that that complex, that package of things that I've been talking about in the last 3 minutes is the invitation I feel in my heart to move forward with a horrible, horribly sociopathic, narcissistic president who is encouraging division and bigotry and misogyny and violence and injustice, and with the bigotry, these horrible experiences of separating children from their parents, yeah. You know, at borders, and losing track of teenagers who have found sanctuary in this country, and.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't be in denial about what's going on in the Oval Office and what is going on in all of the cabinet offices of secretaries being encouraged to dismantle really helpful, important democratic institutions. But our identity has to be people who are equipping ourselves to putting an end to that through our activism and to leading what will be a huge repair project when the occupant of the White House is gone.
Mm-hmm. Something struck me when you said, I love that. I'm going to use that for myself to go through life as a learner. And it struck me that that's also the place where you tend to have your heart most open as well. That's
yeah, and that's the creative place to be. You can be really quite non-creative when you're identifying yourself as a victim or as a hero.
Either way, right?
Either way.
Wow.
Either way is a dead end. it really is. But this hero thing, I mean, this learner thing, really is a way forward. Michelangelo is reported to have said when he was 95, I am still learning.
Mm.
And all of us want to be still learning when we're 95.
Yeah. Ed and I have a dear friend who just turned 100, and I think that she would say that she's still learning too.
Totally.
So activism. So yeah, the Parkland kids were extraordinary in that they became activists within minutes, right? So when somebody, so for the people that are depressed or feel pushed down by the current climate, what do you say to them? How do we take care of our hearts in the midst of feeling unwell?
Yeah. You're talking about in addition to reading my book.
Wait, I'm so sorry. Oh, my God. Really bad interview mistake. Step number one, read again, people. It's 8 Habits of Love. Open your heart. Open your mind. Very good. Yes. Just pick up the book.
Yeah.
End of story. End of interview. We're done.
I mean, the reason I love the fact that if you write a book, and it has any value that you spend the rest of your life talking about the book. I'm really glad that that is the case because this book wrote itself through me, and it's not that I invented this thing about love and fear and certainly didn't identify for the first time these 8 habits. But they were revealed to me over time, not in a one-time epiphany, and I keep practicing them myself. So over the course of a 24-hour period, you know, I will have some significant periods of stillness. I will feel called to generosity. You know, I will understand how important it is to exercise compassion to myself and to others. Forgiveness is a fourth one, to exercise forgiveness to myself and to others. To be called into candor, to understand that truth is always evolving and calls me to reassess and rework what yesterday's truth in the journey of being led into all truth, which is a lifetime journey, to be in community, always to find like-minded, like-souled people. And sometimes that's the first thing we need to do, is to get on the phone with someone and say, I just needed to hear your voice. I was thinking about you. Or I am crushed today and I need to know how you're dealing with this. When can we get together? And play is to test whether or not I'm too uptight or too lackadaisical. It goes in play, it calls for some play in your line so that you can feel something, not to have it too lax, too tight. So I literally, Bridget, I really do revisit those 8 habits. Mm-hmm. And I just keep going through them over and over and over again. And that's when I have a wounded heart. I need to have a day of stillness or a day of generosity or time of forgiveness or certainly some community and or any number of other habits or to use them in different kinds of forms of getting together.
For the people who don't have a practice of stillness, mm-hmm. can you...
Sure.
Besides reading your book and finding out how you would suggest they develop a practice.
Yeah, this world needs everybody to practice stillness. And we need a larger population of people practicing stillness than the population of people who've read my book. Stillness, I like to use images to teach with. And one image that's very important is a basin of silty water. And the reality is that when you take a basin of silty water and you put it still on a table or on the ground, and if you leave it long enough and let it be still, then the silt will fall to the bottom and you will be able to understand what is there in the container. The other image that I embrace is that of the ocean, and the fact that all oceans have choppy water at their surface. And at the ocean floor, there's gentleness and quiet and stillness, except for that deep, gentle current that goes through all ocean floors. So we can always, when we close our eyes in a period of stillness, for instance, you know, I was up this morning at 6:30, hour of stillness. And there's always that, what our Buddhist friends call monkey mind. Mm-hmm. A million ideas and thoughts and lists and concerns. And it really helps to have a word or a phrase that has really moved you at some important point in your life. And for some people, it is the word love. And then simply every time you realize that you've gone down the road of ideas and plans and thoughts, you simply return to your breath and you return to your sacred word. And in that process of emptying yourself of all those projects you have and returning to the source, to the breath, in that process, stillness comes. And the idea is not to come out of stillness with an idea, with a plan. The idea is to come out of stillness with sweetness.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
With the sweetness of spirit and soul. With the confidence, with gentleness, with grace, so that you're an instrument of grace for yourself and for everybody else you meet all day long.
That's beautiful. That is so inspiring. Thank you for that. I mean, and I meditate every day, but that just even inspired me. I've had a meditation practice since I was 21, and I'm fully inspired. Okay, so before we started this interview, we were talking about the little superhero of love who's feeding the homeless in Atlanta. And I wanted to hear your thoughts on, I know we have a lot of young heroes stepping up, but I want to talk about the parents of those heroes, and also if there are any tips for the parents that are listening here for raising those little superheroes and keeping their hearts open in spite of the fact that when they go to school. In fact, when I interviewed him, one of the things that he said, one of his dreams was, I said, what would you like to have happen in 1 year from, what's your dream for a year from now? And he said, 1 million homeless people have jobs and, but he also said, and all the bad guys out of the schools. So given that children are going and parents are sending their, what would you, sending their kids into potential danger?
Yeah. Well, before I answer directly, that question, that very important question. It's important to ground ourselves in wisdom. And my own spiritual path is a kind of a reconstructed Christianity. And Jesus said that unless you change, and that's important, and become like these little children, you will never enter, in his word for Buddha land or mind of Christ or whatever, in certain gospels, was you will never enter the kingdom of God. Kingdom is a better translation than kingdom. The relationship of God, where everything is has God connections. And for him to say that having a child mind is the passport to that way of living interconnectedly. And I would quickly add, to live creatively, compassionately, and to live innovatively. This little kid in Atlanta is literally living, creating a new world. He has a new vision for the world, and he's living it out. And visions for the new world come from a childlike mind. I'm not talking about a childish, egocentric, selfish mind. I'm talking about a childlike mind. A wonder mind would be a good way to talk about that. So, what we advise parents to do is based on that, is to understand that you were part of bringing into history another carrier of the divine.
Beautiful.
And never lose sight of the fact that your child is a divinity walking around, a golden child, carrying ideas straight from heaven to earth. And it is very important to foster their creativity. I mean, we were talking about Meghan Markle, the new Duchess of Sussex, and Prince Harry's new wife. And when she was a kid, she saw something on TV that was anti-woman. And she complained about it, and her father encouraged her to write letters, and she did, and they changed things. Well, bless his heart for whatever problems he's struggling with right now. He was doing what you're asking about in terms of what good parents do, and we who are parents have and grandparents, you know, we moved to Alabama from here to be grandparents to our grandchildren. We have this responsibility to understand that they are divine, and divinity is an event going on inside them. That's another very important thing that that physics is teaching us. You know, beginning with Einstein, to move us away from a Newtonian notion that we are just kind of parts of a Strasbourg clock that need to be tinkered with so that we work. Or, you know, Lego pieces that you fit together. No, we are energy, and atoms, all the millions of atoms inside of us our energy. And the parts of the atom, down to the quantum parts, are actual events going on. And so I am this, you know, body teeming with all these events that are going on. And then you are too, and then you and I are together, and you and I are having events going on every second. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the molecules that are inside me are going to be inside you in a few minutes. And those are the same molecules that were in Muhammad, and were in Jesus, and were in Gandhi, and so we're all connected. And to have an understanding that this child you have in your midst is this walking experience of divine events, and you need to listen to them.
That's beautiful.
Hugely important.
Events going on. I have never heard of it spoken like that. It's so beautiful.
Honey, you're an event.
And I just, I was just imagining like a fireworks show that's going on in your heart at every single second of your day.
Exactly.
Wow.
You're happening.
That's so beautiful. Okay. Any final, I know we have a little time crunch here. So any final things that you want to say besides everybody needs to read 8 Habits of Love, Open Your Heart, Open Your Mind. That's the primer, not the primer. That's the required reading before anybody reads my book. You can't read my book until you read.
I guess one of the most important things we can conclude with is the call to self-awareness. Is to the degree that I get caught up in either my busyness or my fatigue or my projects, and I'm not making room to rest and have good food and have relationships, but to build that observation deck so that I can look at myself and ask myself on a regular basis throughout the day, am I dancing with love or dancing with fear right now? I think that's one of the greatest gifts that any of us can give ourselves, relationships, and the world, and history.
And am I dancing with love? And I love the observation deck, too.
Yeah, hugely important.
So many things I'm going to take away from this. I feel fortified and ready to take on the day. I just want to share with everybody that the quote that is at the top of the final chapter of my book is a quote from 8 Habits of Love. I'm just going to read it now. When we employ the energy of love, we are leaving fear behind us and choosing instead to make our way toward a new, inspiring goal, living our lives with open hearts. And the book is full of juicy things exactly like that. But that's precisely why I invited you here today. And thank you, Ed Bacon,
for
helping all of our superheroes of love with your superhero of loveness. All right.
Loved every second. We'll be right back.